Today, Brookings City Manager Gary Milliman is here to provide the backstory as follow-up to the City of Brookings City Council meeting. I'm your host, Connie Hunter. Let's welcome Gary Milliman once again to KCIW's Community Conversations. Thanks for being here today, Gary. How are you?
Great. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're going to follow up to the City Council meeting that took place last Monday, August 24th. So much happened again this week. And because there was so much on the agenda, and one particular topic of very significant interest to our area, I want to keep it to one topic. And let's have this program focus on the National Disaster Resilience Competition, because this grant could be very significant to solving some big issues here in our Brookings Harbor community. I say Brookings Harbor because a portion of the grant application, as Gary outlined at the City Council meeting, benefits Harbor right alongside Brookings by including a request for funding for the water intertie. Is that how you say it?
That's right.
Okay. And that's into Harbor Water and working toward a partner agreement. So, Gary, first things first, what is the National Disaster Resilience Competition? And can you give us the backstory on how Brookings got into the competition to begin with?
Sure. This is a new program that was developed by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. They have allocated $1 billion nationwide to fund resilience projects in communities that have experienced damage from past national disasters. For example, Brookings qualifies because we had two federally declared disasters. One was a flood disaster in January of 2012. And the other was the tsunami disaster in 2011. So we qualified, but we're not the only qualified communities in Oregon that might be included in the program. The state is the applicant, and what they did is they looked at communities in Oregon that had been affected by disaster and decided to focus on coastal communities and invited three cities interspersed along the coast to participate in the program. And two of those cities ultimately were chosen and agreed to participate, the city of Brookings and the city of Reedsport. So Reedsport and Brookings are combining our efforts in cooperation with the state of Oregon through the governor's office and the Department of Administrative Services to pursue this competition proposal. Essentially, it's a grant application that we're coordinating with the state. So we were chosen primarily because we were a disaster victim and also because through the phase one application that we submitted through Oregon and into HUD, Oregon, Brookings and Reedsport as a group were selected to submit a phase two application because we demonstrated a capacity to undertake the project.
In your report to the City Council, you said that there were three projects and a possible fourth that are being considered for this grant application. Can you share the same project outline as you reported to the City Council and talk about city alternative water source, expanded Brookings Medical Clinic, and a possible $4 million for replacing and upgrading Coos Cree Electric Co-op transmission lines?
Sure. We initially, in our project list, developed proposals for eight projects. And we knew that some of those projects would drop off the list because there's limited funding. $1 billion isn't that much nationwide when you spread it across 40 applicants. So we're competing against other states and other communities that have been affected by disaster. So in this case, the application is going to be scaled back from our original list of projects because of the limited amount of funding and also because we need to do a benefit cost analysis for each of these projects to demonstrate that the funding is being wisely invested and will have a long-term benefit to the community. Part of the resilience criteria is that it's not just a disaster preparedness program. You need to demonstrate that these projects will make the community more resilient to disaster, but that they would also provide economic resiliency to the community on an ongoing basis. So it's sort of a combination of economic development and disaster preparedness. So the three projects that have been vetted and remain on the project list at this point, and I believe will be the three projects that go into the state application, include a water resiliency project. That's the top priority for us, and that would include rehabilitating an old water intake on the Chetco River, where we currently have water rights, pumping water out of the Chetco to the Ferry Creek Reservoir. That's a reservoir that the city took out of operation in the early 1980s, expanding the capacity of the reservoir to about 40 million gallons of storage, and then installing a pipe from the reservoir back to the water treatment plant to make that water storage available for periods of drought or following a earthquake event to have a reserve capacity that we don't have now. We currently have about a three-day capacity in storage, which is very limiting. So it would provide us with a tremendous increase in reserve capacity for water, for firefighting, for domestic service. And we included in that proposal an intertie across the Chetco River to the harbor water system, recognizing that they have experienced some saltwater intrusion periodically over the last couple of years, and actually, I think, back in the 1980s as well. And that would give us the ability and give them the ability to, during periods of low tide and or I guess high tide and low water flows where they have these saltwater intrusion problems, they could put their system on hold and draw from that reservoir and the city system for those brief periods. It would also provide both communities with the ability to draw on each other when there's a disaster or a major fire. So that's our number one project that would serve both communities as one, essentially.
I want to interject a quick question. And so the salty water in Harbor would go away with the intertie, is that?
Well, it would. They would be able to adjust their operations so they would not need to draw water from their source of supply during those saltwater intrusion periods. So it would be a benefit to them in that. That's one of the benefits that would accrue to the Harbor.
I didn't mean to interrupt your flow. So the next piece of that was the $4 million for replacing and upgrading Coos Creek electric transmission lines?
Sure. To bounce back briefly, the water project is about $8 million. So the next project that we've been looking at, and these are not in priority order, is a project that was proposed actually by Coos Creek Electric Cooperative, where they are looking to replace a number of wooden transmission poles between Brookings and Gold Beach, essentially, that are susceptible to storm damage, high wind damage. They want to replace those wooden poles with steel poles, similar to some of the poles that are in town now that they replaced a few years ago, to make their transmission system more resilient and avoid power outages caused by high winds. And the total cost of that project is estimated at about $4 million. We're looking at whether we're going to be requesting the full $4 million or whether, because they are not a governmental entity, there would need to be some participation on their part.
Would any of those lines be put underground? Is that part of the idea, or is it just strictly for the poles?
Initially, part of the plan was to underground portions of the system to key facilities in Brookings. But after that project was vetted by the benefit cost analysis, that portion of the project was taken out, and it's just focusing on the transmission lines.
So when you mention cost benefit analysis to determine the strength of these projects, can you tell us a little bit more about which of the projects has been considered the strongest? We already know that that's the alternative water source, right?
The strongest project in terms of cost benefit is the clinic project.
Oh, okay. So we haven't talked about that yet. So the expanded Brookings Medical Clinic. Well,
right. That's that project involves the a major expansion of the Curry Clinic. The Brookings Clinic here next to City Hall. It would involve an expanded emergency room beyond what they currently have under construction, actually building a new building and a major addition to the existing facility of almost equal size to the existing facility, and an expanded service that would include services such as kidney dialysis and chemotherapy, fusion therapy, and stationary MRI, and a mental health bed, and just a variety of other services that people now are required to go out of the community to secure. And a major reason why that is a high priority and scores well is that in a major disaster event, our road system here is going to be disrupted. So not only will people have a need for emergency room access locally because they may not be able to get to Gold Beach or Crescent City, but people who rely on dialysis aren't going to be making it over the hill to Medford or Grants Pass for their regular treatments. People who rely on chemotherapy aren't going to be making that trip. So we need to have those services available here. You know, we have an aging population. A lot of folks rely on those services and receive them on a weekly or even daily basis. So that is what has made that project even more attractive, not only the emergency room aspect of it, but sustaining medical services for the most at-risk population, those who rely on health resources on a regular basis. So we're looking at a $10 million project to make that happen here at the Curry Clinic, and that is regarded by the folks doing the cost-benefit analysis as having the greatest benefit to the community.
So we're looking at a total of about $20 million possibility at this point?
Right. That's the number that looks like has is a good prospect. Now, of course, we're competing against many other projects from many other communities, and whether that is the final number that is applied for or the final number that is awarded, we won't know until the final application is approved by the state in October and the grant awards are announced in January. So that's sort of the long-term cycle. There is a fourth project, and we can talk about that a little bit in a minute.
You know, Gary, I'm really looking forward to talking about the fourth project, which has to do with the Borax property and possible affording housing possibilities with the in the Lone Ranch area with the sewer service for 50-unit housing project. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay, well, U.S. Borax some years ago has an approved detailed development plan for a large housing project on the north end of Brookings, known as Lone Ranch. And that project hasn't moved forward, primarily because of economic conditions, not a lot of demand for new housing since 2007. And there are also some significant costs associated with getting sewer service to that site. There's already water service there. So it's about a $2 million lift to get sewer service up to that site. And that's been a major reason why things haven't moved along. We approached Borax after attending one of the competition briefings and learned that they were encouraging us to include a housing project in the application. I contacted U.S. Borax, the Lone Ranch representatives, and told them that this might be an opportunity to help fund the sewer extension out to the project if they were willing to commit that a certain number of the units would be reserved for low and moderate income housing. And the response I received was very positive and very quick. And that was that one of the neighborhoods that is included in the overall plan was about a 50-unit project across the street, almost across the street, from the college on the north side of Lone Ranch Parkway. It was a condominium project. And they told me that they were actually rethinking the condominium project, but that they would be willing to contribute that land that they had set aside for that portion of the project. They're willing to contribute that land at no cost to a housing project if the sewer service could be extended to the project, and if we were able to partner with someone to actually build the housing. So since that time, I've talked with a couple of housing developers, nonprofits, and including the Tolowa Tribe and Timberline Housing, which has 4 low and moderate income housing projects in the city already, and all have expressed interest in being the housing partner. So as we speak, the grant consultant working on the proposal for the state is talking with the Borax representatives and representatives of the housing partners and the state housing authority, trying to package together a project concept that would include financing for not only the sewer line, but actually the construction of the housing, and trying to identify who the housing developer might be and putting it together as a housing project that could be inserted into this application or maybe a standalone application through HUD. So that's still a work in progress, but it seems that everyone involved is very interested in trying to put that together.
In addition to what you just said about a standalone project, something you know me a little bit, Gary, and probably can guess what I'm about to say as a commentator, I wish the project could include student dorms and housing for veterans and their families to be able to use their VA home loans, and depending on the veteran, maybe even use their post-9/11 GI educational benefits and be able to attend Southwestern Oregon Community College, which, as you said, is right there, the Brookings Satellite Campus. So beyond the 50 homes in a standalone project, is there a possibility for other kinds of affordable, low-cost housing projects?
Well, that's a great idea, and is something that I will definitely bring up with all of the folks who are looking at this and beyond, and talk with the Oregon Housing Authority and others who are engaged in housing development. You know, the city hasn't been active in housing development. We don't have a housing authority, and it's not a role that the city has played before. So this is kind of a new venture for us. And requires a lot of learning and relationship building.
You know, and I might have a good community model on veterans housing for a college. Some of the work that I did in Arizona actually is with a gentleman who started the first Student Veterans of America chapter at ASU. And one of the things that they're advocating and trying to put together is a funding package to do special low-cost housing for veterans who want to go to school. But we know a lot of that money is federal money, and those same pools of money might be available for this kind of project. So I'll get the info that I can about that.
We'll do that. And, you know, we're talking about a September deadline to get the application together so the state can wrap it up and get it submitted by October. But that's not the end of it. This if we are successful in partnering with the state, and the state is successful, and you know, part of the project has been that the state has had to develop a new infrastructure to manage this whole concept. So they're setting up their structure, which is I think a unique structure, utilizing existing regional solutions teams, and Oregon is one of the few states, if not the only state, that has just approved the creation of a state resilience officer in the governor's office. So they're doing great things at the state, and we're going to demonstrate that as a part of the application as well. And we believe that if these programs can be proven to be successful, well-managed, and achieve the goals, both our local goals and the HUD goals, that there'll be another round and another round and successive rounds, and that we can start moving along with additional projects, not only for Brookings, but also move this out to other rural communities in Oregon.
When you mentioned the regional solutions team, that really addresses some missing layers in planning. And I know that the state of Oregon also has the Oregon Solutions, which is another piece of the puzzle that can help fill in some of the bigger projects, especially around community block grants. that help with assisting in building that missing layer of planning. And the good news about once you do a project like that is a structure, as you said, that you can use, and the relationships are built, and the communications between the different groups are there, and it just, it's actually the tool that you need to get things done, isn't it, Gary?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Beyond Brookings, that's exactly what we're doing.
So I wanted to bring up just a couple of points, unless there's something else that you wanted to talk about those particular projects. I wanted to talk, and I think one point worth mentioning, I think, is that Coos Cree Electric Cooperative would cost share in the proposed housing project. The electrical project.
Right.
So for those of us who aren't as versed as on putting together big projects like this, can you tell us what it means to cost share?
Cost share means that you receive funding through the federal grant program, but you also have a local contribution, funding that is contributed by the participating community, or in the case of Coos Cree Electric, by their business. The Coos Cree Electric Cooperative is a co-op. It's not a government entity, and it's not a purely business entity. So they would be an entity where a cost share, a contribution from the company or the customer would be a requirement of the program.
And beyond that, with regards to a partnership agreement with Harbor, what are the steps that the city has to go through to develop a partner agreement with Harbor?
There are two agreements that would be involved in including the Harbor Water District in this program. One would be a partnership agreement between the Harbor Water District and the state of Oregon. In that agreement, they agree to participate in this project to receive, be one of the sub-recipients of the grant funding, and be a participant in the construction project, completing it in a timely fashion. So that would be a partnership agreement between Harbor Water District and the state. The city would also have a partnership agreement with the state for the larger portion of the project and for assuring that the construction is completed on a timely fashion. A second agreement is what I characterize as an intertie agreement, and that would be a separate agreement between Harbor Water District and the city, which outlines how this arrangement, whereby we would share water during times of emergency, would work. That's an agreement that we don't need now. What we need now, before the application goes in September, is the partnership agreement between all of the participating agencies and the state to make sure that the sub-recipients, Harbor Water, the city, Coos Cree Electric, Cree Health District, agree that they'll accept the money and will comply with the goals of the program.
Gary, there's always something that amazes me, and the one thing that amazed me about this project is the lengths that you go as city manager to get the city of Brookings strategically in place to have the best outcomes. For example, the National Disaster Resilience Competition, you had to go to Denver so a big trip there. Do you want to tell us a little about why and what you brought back from that trip beyond what you might have expected?
Sure. This activity has involved twice weekly telephone conferences with a variety of state agencies and the city of Reedsport, headed up by the governor's office, to go over all of the pieces needed to come together to include in the application. We've got a grant writer on board on that line, people from the Office of Emergency Management, Oregon Business Development. I mean, it's a long list of folks who we meet with twice a week on the phone for about an hour to 2 hours. In addition to that, I've had several trips to Portland and Salem to meet with those folks, and I have had two 3-day attended two three-day workshops, one in Seattle and one in Denver, meeting with the Rockefeller Foundation, who's been retained by HUD to assist the applicants in preparing good projects applications. So they, the Rockefeller Foundation has been doing a great job on doing resilience education, resilience training. It's kind of a new concept, this concept of merging emergency management with economic development. And it's something that the Rockefeller Foundation has done internationally. And this is really their first foray into a broader training within the United States. And so they're the learning experience of that the Rockefeller Foundation has brought is kind of a new thinking about a community resiliency, that you need to not only be prepared and be able to be resilient to avoid disaster damage, but you need to be able to recover faster. And a good part of being able to recover faster is to have a resilient economy before the disaster. So it's kind of an integration of all of those pieces.
And I'm going to want to know more about the resilience officer or the person at the state level. You mentioned that a minute ago. Tell me a little bit about that position.
Well, that's a new position that was included in the state budget this year. The position will go into effect in January of 2016. So the person hasn't been selected yet. It'll be housed in the governor's office, and their role will be to undertake a resilience planning effort statewide for state agencies, and then moving out to include resilience programming and education to local agencies as well. And part of our application, our being Brookings, Reedsport, and the state, will be to request funding for a rural resilience officer, someone who would work with the state resilience officer and focus on rural communities to deliver resilience education and programming.
Now, how does that differ from like RDI, Rural Development Initiative, and their programming? Do you know?
The resilience officer will be coordinating work of a variety of state agencies, including RDI, to make state agencies and state facilities and then local agencies and facilities more resilient and draw on the expertise, revenue, and resources of a variety of state departments.
You know, I love development and community development, nonprofit development. And, of course, those are the connections beyond government that kind of translate into the community, sometimes where the rubber meets the road. But I just want you to know, as a development geek, you're the rock star for me, Gary. So I appreciate it. And I know that you've been involved in development, for example, raising the money for SWOC here in Brookings. So city manager is a piece of what you do, but community development beyond that is huge. So Gary, I just want to say that I appreciate all that you do in beyond your job, but I want people to really understand Gary Milliman a little bit more, if that's okay. How long have you been in city management? And we may have asked that question in the past, but I'd just like to make sure that people know how much experience you bring to the table.
Well, I've worked in city management for, I think it's 42 years now, starting in Los Angeles County and California, and in various communities in California, worked for the League of California Cities for a while as well. For my whole career, the role of city manager and economic development, there's been no separation. That's a part of what, in my view, city managers should do. So I've been engaged in that activity, those two activities integrated throughout my career.
So one thing that I noted was a press release that actually came via email to KCIW, and that has to do with citizen involvement. Citizen involvement, community input, community buy-in. we talk about these things, but sometimes people just don't know what they can do to be involved or how to demonstrate their support of a project. So, Gary, you've taken the bull by the horns and have requested that folks write letters of support for individual projects or for the entire proposal. You want to tell us how folks can help be a voice in the competition for these funds?
Sure. And we're looking for folks to take a look at the projects that we've outlined, express their thoughts about those projects, but also bring up elements that or other projects that we may not have thought about and may not be included in this competition, but may get included in some other aspect of community resiliency. So we've heard back from folks by email and by telephone and by notes dropped off at the door or at community meetings, and all are welcome. And some of the input we've received included things like hearing from an emergency responder who expressed concern that in the event of a disaster emergency, which adversely affects the ground transportation, that there's a limited supply of bottled oxygen in the community. And what do we do about that? So what do we do about that is that I took that comment to Jenny Razzo, the hospital administrator at Curry General, and said that, well, listen, that's something we need to incorporate into this next development at the clinic. Is there is equipment that could be included in that facility that could be used to generate oxygen and fill oxygen bottles, so that, you know, that comment by an emergency responder about that one concern, we take it seriously, and it moves up and hopefully will move now into a project and be addressed. So that's the kind of thing we're looking for, is comments from the public.
You know, I think I brought this up in a previous interview when I attended a presentation by the gentleman who was the head of emergency services for Napa County when they had the earthquake. And the two things that he said that they really ran out of and had problems attaining were chem packs and suture kits. And so recently I was at a gathering where Jenny Razzo spoke, and I brought that up too. So those are along the lines. What don't we have that we would need? And oxygen is another. So I'm gonna keep that in my mind as three big ones. I take notes on my phone during city council meetings, so please don't think I'm texting during the entire city council meeting. But my notes reminded me that there's a plan to have a community input opportunity in mid-September. You want to tell us a little more about what that opportunity will entail?
Well, we're still trying to organize that. I'm actually meeting with folks this afternoon about a venue for that, and also want to discuss a possible event at the college that would include a discussion about our projects now that they've been a little further vetted, and we can describe them better to get community input about those projects and these other ideas that may come up that may not fit into this program, but are issues that we could possibly address. Another one, for example, a citizen called and suggested that, perhaps we should provide a NOAA radio, a NOAA weather radio, to every resident who resides in the tsunami inundation zone. Well, I'm not sure that's pretty big order, but maybe that's something we could take a look at how to structure. Maybe it would involve making those radios affordable or encouraging them, because that is the device that if you have it plugged in to an outlet in your house, you would hear about tsunami information. You wouldn't have to listen for the siren, or in the middle of the night, it would let you know. So that's on the list of things to figure out how to do.
It's all about economic development and disaster preparedness and resiliency working together. And so there are lots of people out there with lots of good ideas, so we're going to encourage those to continue to come regardless of the deadline on the grant. But sooner is better, right, Gary?
That's right.
Where's a contact email address?
gmilliman@brookings.or.us.
So it goes right to you. Wow.
Right to me.
I'd hate to have your email. Well, I send you enough. You probably hate the fact that I know yours. But anyway, before we conclude this community conversation with City Manager Gary Milliman, I just want to say that if I've missed anything you'd like to talk about, Gary, please fill in and feel free to elaborate.
This has been great. Thank you very much.
Well, Gary, your life's work and years of experience really are a gift beyond measure. And reminds me that having you bring so much energy, enthusiasm, wisdom, and knowledge to our neck of the woods is something that money just can't buy. I'm going to say they don't pay you enough. Anyway, I'm going to repeat the quote I used in a previous community conversations, and this reminds me of you. It's Steve Jobs, founder of Apple, said, "The ones who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do." Thank you for having a vision and the gumption to do the heavy lifting for the Brookings Harbor community with regards to so much, and especially this National Disaster Resiliency Competition. And thanks for being here today, Gary.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. I hope you'll come back soon, okay?
Indeed.
This is Connie Hunter, KCIW, Curry Coast Community Radio, and Community Conversations. And Gary Milliman, it is always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. And the Brookings City Council for modeling unconditional respect for the citizens of the city of Brookings and Curry County. The highest civility rating for any public meeting in Curry County goes to the City of Brookings staff, Mayor Ron, and the City of Brookings City Council, in my opinion. Also, I'd like to show a little gratitude, which is a good daily practice. I also want to say thank you to Justin Only, who is Community Conversations tech guy extraordinaire today. If I get a little nervous, I just have to glance to my left and see the sparkle in your eyes, and I feel reassured. If you enjoy KCIW's podcast, please share the gratitude by making a donation to help us get on the air 24/7, 365. Please go to our kciw.org website and become a founding member. Thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio and help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org. Thank you for listening.